Kempire is brought to you by...
The Kempire After Dark is...
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Back, but it's now the villain act. Yes, we are coming to Philadelphia on July 10th at City Winery. Then we're hitting Atlanta on August 5th, DC on August 22nd, then back here in New York City on September 12th. All shows have meet and greets, but a lot of people asking, what can we expect from the Kempire After Dark, the villain era? Well, Kempire After Dark, if you came to those shows, were already a night of hot topics, spilling tea, seeing a whole other side of me. So you can only imagine what the villain era is going to bring out. I'm so excited to bring to you a night of not just hot topics, but us recapping some of your favorite shows from Real Housewives of Atlanta to Real Housewives of Miami, but also talking about Tyler Perry, the Diddler, and so much more. Can't wait to see all of you in Philly, Atlanta, DC, and New York. The New York City show has a special live stream option, so even if you're coming to these shows or if you're not because you're in another city, that is your option. I'll see you guys this summer in a city near you.
You're listening to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network.
What exactly does this particular jury note that came out yesterday mean for Diddy and his RICO charges? Could it possibly mean that they've already found him guilty on the most serious of crimes? And we have your update in regards to more jury notes coming out in day 2's deliberation of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. Today's video is brought to you by our friends over at Factor Meals. As you know, with covering the Diddy trial, it's kept me incredibly busy. Not only am I covering the Diddy trial, we are covering other lawsuits like Tyler Perry or recapping some of your favorite shows like Real Housewives. So being over a hot stove during the summer is not my ideal place to be. But our friends over at Factor Meals gives you a dietitian-approved, chef-crafted meal with all kinds of add-ons. And they make it so easy this summer. They say summer is here, more sun, more light, more time to do all the things that make summer so special. And the number one thing you don't want to be doing all summer is spending hours cooking inside. That's where Factor comes in. Factor chefs crafted, dietitian approved meals are ready in just 2 minutes. Take the hassle out of eating well. Get started at factormeals.com/Kempire50off and use code Kempire50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code Kempire50off at factormeals.com/Kempire50off for 50% off plus free shipping. Factormeals.com/Kempire50off. More information will be available in the description. So earlier today, we had a video with Kirsten Brown, a Los Angeles prosecutor. This is our third collaboration with her because we wanted to go through the verdict sheet, unpack some of what played out in the closing arguments, and more. But one of the things that we talked about was this jury note. So several notes went back to the judge yesterday, and I just want to highlight some of what that included. So one of the things that it included in note one was the choice of their foreperson. This is practical reasons. This is what they normally do. Note number two, questioning of the juror's ability to follow instructions. That was coming out yesterday that there was a particular juror, I believe juror number 25, that didn't seem to be able to follow instructions, and they wanted the judge, Judge Aaron Subramanian, to have a conversation with him. Based on what we've heard, the judge had a conversation with him and all was good. They went back to deliberations. Not sure exactly what that means. Again, my collaboration with Kirsten might give you a little bit better understanding of the possibilities of what that could mean. Also, what it could mean when it comes to an appeal later if he's convicted. Note number three that went back to the judge says how to understand narcotics distribution allegations. So I want to highlight ABC News's video that they did yesterday in covering this particular note. So let's just get into some of what they were saying in their video, because they also elaborate about this. I also talked about this with Kirsten because we also went through the verdict sheet. So before we get to my conversation with Kirsten, let's take a listen to what ABC News, Eyewitness News, had to say about what was playing out in day one of the jury deliberations in the Diddy trial.
Good evening. I'm Mike Marza. Day one of deliberations in the Sean Diddy Combs trial now in the books. And there were some fascinating developments on this day one. The jury sending four different notes to the judge, a couple just procedural, but a couple also with some interesting maybe backstory to them. The first indicated that they had selected a foreperson. That is part of the process. The second, very interesting, as the jury questioned one of the jurors' ability or willingness to follow the judge's instructions. We're going to get more into that in just a moment. And then
it's the willingness part to me that was kind of concerning, and I'm sure probably concerning for Diddy's defense team as well. Something that they could probably later bring up in regards to an appeal.
Third note was about how to understand narcotics distribution and the allegations surrounding that. Something that the judge and the jury will tackle first thing tomorrow morning. The fourth note was about wrapping for the day and returning tomorrow morning. The judge saying all along that the jury will be able to make their own schedule. They finished around 5 today. We'll be back tomorrow at 9 a.m. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by ABC News legal contributor Bernarda Villalona to dig deeper into everything that unfolded in court and during the deliberations. But first up, Darla Miles with a recap from Lower Manhattan.
The first day of jury deliberations in the Sean Diddy Combs racketeering and sex trafficking trial off to an eventful start, even though it wasn't a full day. Combs' three adult sons and teen daughters in court today, as well as other relatives, and his 84-year-old mother, who has attended almost every day of the trial. Deliberations beginning at 11:19 after a two-hour reading of jury instructions. All 12 jurors and five alternates with their eyes laser-focused on the printout, seeing following back and forth on the page line by line. The 62-page document.
62 pages. 62 pages that they had to go through. This is why I say it's so important when it comes to jury selection, but more importantly, the jury instructions. And we talked about what the prosecution wanted included in these jury instructions. This is part of the reason why so many people were wondering, why would they remove certain allegations, not charges? He's still facing five charges, which is what we discussed with Kirsten in the video from this morning. There were just certain allegations just to make it easier. And mind you, to say make this easier, if they included this, probably 62-page document would have been longer.
Telling jurors to evaluate the evidence carefully and to resist jumping to any conclusions based on personal likes or dislikes, gut feelings or sympathies. The first note, coming back quickly, which is not uncommon at all, saying, "We have elected juror number 5 as our foreperson." Then a second note after lunch saying, "We are concerned juror 25 cannot follow your honor's instructions. Can you please come out and speak with him?" The court sending a note back to the jury room, reminding them to follow his instructions to follow the law. The directive apparently helpful after a few more hours of
that part is really concerning that the judge had to speak with juror number 25 in regards to making sure that he's following the instructions, meaning that he's following the law, meaning that he's following what they have laid out in these jury instructions.
Deliberations, the foreperson sending a third note about page 37 of jury instructions about drug distribution. That's one of the underlying crimes for the racketeering count, deciding if giving drugs to Cassie and Jane during freak-offs was a criminal act. And while jurors only need to find that Combs coerced the two women into participating just one time, they have to be unanimous on which one.
And sidebar, we talked about unanimity and how it was brought up in the prosecution's jury instructions, what they wanted included in the jury instructions. They did not get their way. So Kirsten explained the fact that they had to come to a unanimous decision on that actually is not a good thing for the prosecution.
Distribution and deliberations resume tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. They also told jurors to return with an open mind. In Lower Manhattan, Darla Miles, ABC 7 Eyewitness News.
And our thanks to Darla for that recap. Joined now by ABC News legal contributor Bernarda Villalona to talk about this day one of deliberations. It feels like, you know, it's been a marathon to get here. So here we are. I want to first off talk about this juror situation this morning. So the second note, and the foreperson said, you know, something to the effect of, "You got to come get this guy because he's not following what you want him to do. What do you make of the way it was worded, one, the way it was worded, and then two, what do you think is going on in that jury room?
So at least you know, because that juror, the four-person, signed that note, doesn't necessarily mean that the four-person was the person who wrote the note, is that they are jurors that are taking their oath seriously in terms of what are their directions, what are their instructions when it comes to deliberation. But I'm so surprised that so early on that you get a note like this, because usually when it comes to jury deliberations, it can become heated. Words can be exchanged. People start screaming. I've had jury deliberations where pretty much jurors have almost gone to blows doing deliberations, because you have to think that these jurors have been together for, what, 7-8 weeks? They've heard from 34 witnesses. They heard hours and hours of closing arguments. And then this morning, they heard over two.
And hence why today, in day two of their deliberations, they're asking for transcripts from testimony like Cassie Ventura's testimony. Again, remember, you heard Cassie's testimony at the very beginning of this trial.
Hours and change of jury instructions. So there's so much to talk about. And people may be stuck also in their emotions and their feelings and have, like, already dug their foot in the sand and say that, look, this is how I feel. And maybe I'm not going to move away from that. But we don't know. The note is still very vague. I'm curious to see whether they're saying that he doesn't have the ability to follow the instructions, or is it that he's choosing not to follow the instructions? So it's either he doesn't understand, doesn't comprehend, or he's saying that I'm.
And it's not impossible that he might not comprehend these instructions. 60 something pages of instructions, and it's the law. So you're asking laymen to come to a decision based off the law. These are not attorneys.
Not willing to follow these instructions, no matter what you tell me to do. But it seems that they worked it out, because they were back deliberating for another few hours, and another note in regards to his actions didn't come from the jury.
Yeah, that note about the juror came in about the 70th minute mark, so they were deliberating a little more than an hour before that note came in. So the second note of note, if you will, the second one that really meant anything today, was this about narcotics distribution. What can we glean from that?
Pay attention to this.
So specifically, I think it says, if an individual asks for a controlled substance and a person hands it over, is it distribution? So a couple things that we can glean from that question. Number one, you don't get to the predicate acts to drug distribution unless you have already found that there's already racketeering conspiracy, that it's actually been.
This is what I discussed with Kirsten yesterday, because we were going through the verdict sheet, and we literally, I saw this beforehand and I mentioned it to her. But as we were going through the verdict sheet, it tells you clearly, it says, count one, racketeering conspiracy. This is the count that, first of all, has the life sentence attached to it. But also, this is where so many people, laymen and some attorneys, we've talked about some of those attorneys, including Sunny Hostin from The View, who was a former prosecutor, she doesn't necessarily believe, based off of the evidence, that they've proven RICO here. Because this is very different type of case that a lot of attorneys haven't seen before. But in count one, it says, how do you find the defendant? Not guilty, guilty. Then it says, under the predicate acts, it says, if and only if you find the defendant guilty of count one, which types of racketeering acts do you unanimously find were involved in the offense? So this is important to note. Why are you asking about distribution? Because distribution is on the second page of this verdict sheet. It's the last one. So if you're asking for clarification on that, we're already here where allegedly, again, we're speculating. How did we get here? Why are we deliberating on drug distribution in this particular area, unless you've already determined that he's guilty? You're not even supposed to answer these if you've said that he's not guilty. Again, they could just be getting ahead of themselves. They could just be wanting clarification on all of the different acts before making a final determination. There are no rules in regards to that. They can decide whenever. They could be just making sure they have a full understanding before proceeding with guilty or not guilty. But if we were to assume here, you would think, okay, so we're going through the predicate acts and we're already on the last one and you want clarification on that one, it might make us assume that they've already found him guilty on RICO, the biggest charge that he's facing. But let's take a listen to what an attorney is saying.
proven. You don't get to the predicate acts. You don't start talking about the predicate acts unless you have decided, one, that there was an enterprise, and two, that there was an agreement. So I find it fascinating that they've already gotten there. But again, we don't know whether it's just one juror who has that question, or a few of the jurors that have that question, or actually all 12 of the jurors have that question. But also, in terms of what predicate act that they're asking this question of, remember doing closing arguments, the prosecution said that if you find two independent drug distribution acts, then you can find him guilty of the racketeering conspiracy. So two independent times where Sean Combs distributed narcotics to someone, and it can be, you can ask me for drugs, I give you drugs, and that's possession with intent to distribute. It can be that easy, even by you asking me for it. It's that easy when it comes to making out that count.
And if you remember Cassie's testimony, again, probably why they're asking today for Cassie's testimony, she did talk about asking for drugs because she claims that she needed it in order to do these marathon freak-offs.
So so much that you can look into it. I would be nervous if I was the defense to see a question like that, because again, you must be that you have reached a decision as to that there was an enterprise, a criminal enterprise, an agreement to engage in predicate acts.
Yeah, and count one, racketeering conspiracy, faces up to life in
prison.
Up
to life, that's the most serious one.
It's a big deal. And then the other four deal with sex trafficking.
So
take me through the process, because this is day one, and I'm interested to know, and I think a lot of people maybe watching this too would be interested to know, what happens when the jury goes into that room for the first time, the door shuts behind them, and for the first time in weeks, they are able to talk about this case?
Absolutely. So you got to think, once the jury starts deliberating, and these are the 12 sitting jurors, because the alternate jurors are no longer with this jury. So you have the 12 sitting jurors that are inside of a room, and while they're inside of that room, they don't have access to internet. They don't have access to their phones. Their only communication to the outside world is by sending a note through the foreperson. They have pages that are numbered. They write out their note, whatever it's a question, it's an instruction, or saying that they want to leave by 5. The foreperson signs it, dates it, times it, and then they knock on the door and they give it to whoever the courtroom deputy is or the courtroom marshal that's standing by the door to take whatever notes that exist.
We talk a lot about this with Kirsten as well, but I know sometimes taking in 2 hours of information, some things get lost. This is why I'm repeating and talking about this process, because a lot of us, even if we follow this case, sometimes we forget some of the process. And also, some of the cases that we follow are civil or at state level. Things that are done at the federal level a lot of times are very different.
So when they're inside that room, the 12 deliberating jurors, the first thing that they do is that they select who the foreperson is. And that's exactly what happened. That was the first note that the court received today announcing that there is a foreperson, and juror number 5 is a foreperson. Now, we don't know whether it's actually the sitting juror number 5 or whether it's a juror who had the number 5 when they were originally selected. Mm-hmm. So we're unsure as to who exactly the foreperson is. The foreperson doesn't have any more power or decision making than any other person. The only thing is that the foreperson, one, announces the verdict, if there's a verdict, and two, signs whatever notes that are sent out for the judge. But once we move on from there, the jury right now, they have access to a laptop that has the evidence on it. They also have the written jury instructions. So that's another thing that's like ringing a little bell in my head, because you have the jury instructions. So for them to have asked about the possession with intent to distribute, they want more clarification.
And when we asked this of Kirsten said that more than likely the judge will just refer them back to the jury instructions. But it will be interesting to see why that question was brought up yesterday.
So with the jury instruction, the evidence, and I believe they may have some transcripts or some testimony. I'm not sure if they have all of the testimony with them. They get to talking. 12 strangers that do not know each other now get to discuss finally.
They could not discuss this case. So when they would take lunch breaks and things like that, they would have to talk about everything else but this case. Remember, this jury was also not sequestered. They were just told not to discuss this case with anyone. Did they follow those rules? That is our hope, but you can't control that. Literally, you can have these conversations or overhear conversations on the train about this Diddy trial, especially here in New York, where Diddy is from.
The evidence that they've heard, they get to talk about Jane and Cassie and these videos and what they think about the case and what evidence they found credible. Was there an arson? Hey, Kid Cudi, you saw him testify. Famous singer, rapper. You saw him testify. What do you think about what he testified to? Capricorn Clark, what do you think about what she testified? Oh, two entertainers also testified in this case. What do you think about that? I think also you get these jurors that remember throughout the whole trial, they were also taking notes because each one of them were given a notebook and they were taking notes throughout the trial. But the judge in his instructions specifically say that their notes don't carry more weight than what the transcript actually says. So the transcript is what's binding, not any juror's particular notes.
How often do they kind of take a straw poll and say, where is everybody at?
They probably already did. I think that's probably where.
We talked about this with Kirsten as well. Again, the rules for them, they set up their rules. They set up their schedule. And she says, don't be surprised that they all went in there with a plan on when they're going to come to a verdict, when where they stand already on some of the counts. Again, this is up to them.
They got to that one juror that had an issue or has an issue with deliberating.
So they basically go through the five counts.
It's quite possible.
Count one, what does everybody think? Vote, and then assume, you know, obviously they haven't reached a verdict yet, so there was some disagreement. So then when they operate, so tomorrow morning they'll come back at 9 a.m., get some clarification on, I mean, both sides are still trying to figure out what to even say to them,
what
right?
What to say to them. So the prosecution wants this judge to tell the jury that what was on the mind of the person that received the narcotics shouldn't play any role as to the possession with intent to distribute. So whether someone asked for it or didn't ask for it, it doesn't affect the elements of possession with intent to distribute.
And the defense is still trying to work through what they want.
Trying to figure it out, yes. But also, by them asking that question, the defense can also glean, oh, they're taking into account whether Jane or Cassie actually wanted it. Because remember, when we're asking about whether a person wanted it, we're going into the sex trafficking and about whether this sex was consensual. Mm. So you probably do have one juror that's taking that into account as to the consent of both these women.
Mm. It's so tough to know how long these.
It is.
Go,
it
right?
is.
And is. But do we? Do you have any gut feeling on where we're at with the process?
You know, a case like this is difficult, and the reason that it's much more difficult than another RICO case is because of the defendant, and you're dealing with a celebrity who once had the key to New York City.
Literally.
You know, literally.
Given by Eric Adams, who was once indicted, but conveniently has no longer been indicted by the SDNY.
Known throughout the world. So I think that plays a huge role. It's almost like putting extra weight on the prosecution that, no, it's beyond all doubt you have to prove it. And, of course, that's not the standard. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. Yeah. So much plays into it because also you got to think that because this.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Sean Diddy Combs. People on the jury can be like, no, this is not what he should go down for. It should have been state charges. He shouldn't have been charged with racketeering charges. That, oh, the government is targeting him. They should focus on other crimes, not this. This is something that's petty. You just never know what's on the mind of these jurors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because part of the jury instruction, the judge told them, you are the ultimate trier of the facts.
That's right. The most important people in that courtroom right now, Mike, are those 12 jurors. It's not the judge. It's not the government. It's not the defense attorneys. It's those 12 jurors. Those 12 jurors are ultimately going to decide the fate of Sean Diddy Combs.
And you got the sense of the weight of it all.
Again, the importance of why they were fighting for certain jurors to be on this jury, and why they were fighting for juror number 6. And they fought so hard, and so that possibly if they have to appeal this, that will be brought up on in that 14 pages that we read through like a week ago. This is part of the reason. We talked about this with Kirsten as well. This is part of the reason why they fought so hard, because if the possibility does come up that he's convicted, they want to bring these issues up upon appeal. I mean, the responsibility that these jurors have, it's huge when you think about it. And you can understand why Diddy's body language, according to people that were inside the court this week, why he seems so nervous. He's tapping his leg all day yesterday.
Well, when we heard earlier that Sean Combs and his family appeared to be praying together
yesterday
and bowing their heads as the jury set out on this very important decision, and they're back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., we appreciate your perspective.
Yes, we appreciate it. Guys, as always, we're citing our sources, ABC 7 Eyewitness News here in New York City. Let's talk about day 2 of the deliberations. But before we do that, don't forget the Kempire After Dark, the villain era, is coming to Philadelphia on July 10th. It's our first summer date that we are going to be talking about stories like Diddy. We'll be talking about Real Housewives of Atlanta and Miami and whatever hot topics that might be on your mind. You will also be able to ask me questions and things like that. It's going to be a fun night. Alexander Rogers will be opening up the show for us as well. And then we're coming to Atlanta on August 5th at the City Winery there, then back in DC on August 22nd, and then back here in my hometown of New York City. All shows have meet and greets available, but the New York City show has a live stream available. So even if you're in another part of the country or another part of the world, you will have access to the live stream option. And what I say in Philly, Atlanta, or DC won't be what we talk about come September. I don't know what we will be talking about, but it will definitely be a fun time. Get your tickets today. More information on the Kempire After Dark. The Villain Era tickets will be available in the description, along with everything else Kempire, including our merch. Let's get into day 2 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial. And look, I'm doing this in the afternoon. There might be other developments that come out. We'll do a separate video or we'll talk about it tomorrow. Literally, I just wanted to give you an update on what happened yesterday and what's happening today. According to NBC News, who we've been utilizing covering this story and giving you your summaries, there is a Diddy trial playlist for those that maybe just want to hear everything from the beginning. And while this jury is deliberating, you can hear that on or watch that on the Kempire YouTube channel. You can also hear our summaries on the Kempire podcast. The podcast actually has a few extended versions because of additional content that we ended up getting after we did the video. So NBC News says that the jury returned to the jury room today for day 2 of the deliberations after completing 5.5 hours yesterday. They sent 4 notes to the judge, as we mentioned, including a question about drug distribution, which the judge will answer after conferring with the attorneys. They went directly to the jury room and began deliberations at around 9 a.m. The jury sent its 5th note at around 10:27 a.m. this morning. Prosecutors and defense attorneys returned to the courtroom where they all looked at their phones and conferred about the note. Prosecutor Maureen Comey went to the defense table to chat with defense lawyer Tenney Garagos. Prosecutors were chatting and taking notes as the defense team huddled near the court artists. Janice Combs has arrived as we wait for the jury's latest note to be read aloud. She has been waiting in the 8th floor cafeteria. She's been there for the most part, almost every single day. The daughters are now have been coming to court as well. The sons have been coming sporadically. I heard that Justin probably has been the only one that's really come almost every single day. So according to NBC, they said the jury requested transcripts this morning of testimony given by Cassie Ventura and Daniel Phillip, a S worker who was hired for freak-offs with Combs and Ventura. They asked specifically for Ventura's testimony about the March 2016 Intercontinental Hotel assault, about when she and Combs were at the Cannes Film Festival and its aftermath, and about her freak-offs with Phillip. The note also asked what Phillip told the court about a freak-off at Essex Hotel. Comey told the judge that they reached an agreement on that Philip testimony and one of the sections regarding the Cannes incident, though there was a dispute over where to cut off the events after the incident. The prosecution added that they are working through the testimony on the Intercontinental Hotel. So these are questions I would have for Kirsten in regards to why don't they just get the full amount? But I guess this is where they both sides have to agree upon how much information they're going to share with the jury in regards to this, even though the jury has heard all of this testimony. But I guess it also makes sense in regards to now the new jury instructions and what's relevant to as per the jury instructions. So the morning started with a heated debate on yesterday's jury question about a specific aspect of drug distribution. Both sides took the notes as critical opportunities to influence the response. A note came in yesterday just before court closed for the day, as you know, asking whether an individual is considered a distributor if they gave substances to someone who asked for the drugs. Prosecutors pointed to lines on page 37 of the jury charge document, the jury instructions, which said that distributing, quote, simply means to deliver, to pass over, or to hand over something to another person. I don't know how you feel about that, but that doesn't necessarily look good for the defense. Combs is not charged with drug distribution specifically, but possession with an intent to distribute is considered a predicate crime within the RICO charges. Defense attorney Mark Agnifilo argued that the answer didn't go far enough, but the judge, Aaron Subramanian, ultimately sided with the government on what to send back. He says, I just listened to you and I have heard what you said, Subramanian said to Agnifilo. I don't think your concern has any basis. And if you missed it, our conversation in regards to the closing arguments with a prosecutor, Kirsten Brown, it's worth listening to. It's worth watching that interview because her perspective on they're both the defense closing arguments and the prosecutor's closing arguments is very interesting. So according to NBC News, they said the prosecution and defense went back and forth over what parts of Ventura's testimony regarding the March 2016 assault she endured from Combs at the Intercontinental Hotel should be sent back to the jury. Combs' defense wanted to include messages between Combs and Ventura leading up to the hotel visit in which they were coordinating a freak-off. Still, prosecutors wanted it limited to the incident at the hotel itself. So now we're understanding why they have to discuss what is sent back to the jury. Both sides went back and forth until the judge suggested offering the jury Ventura's entire testimony transcript. Emily Johnson, one of the government's attorneys, told the court that prosecution had no problem with this because we've said this with our collaboration with Kirsten. We've talked about this in the summary that Cassie's testimony was pretty strong in comparison to Jane's and probably the strongest of all the testimonies. So Emily Johnson, one of the government's attorneys, told the court the prosecution had no problem with this, but Combs' lawyer, Tenney Garagos, pushed back. Garagos argued that the entire testimony, which is 800 pages long, would be too overwhelming for the jury. They also know the strength behind Cassie's testimony. But I agree, 800 pages is a lot. And they also don't want the jury deliberating past the holiday. And I don't know if you realize this, I learned this today, the court is closed on Thursday. So that is also limiting the amount of time. And according to my texting with Kirsten, she says that puts a lot of pressure on the jury, but also on the defense. They're not liking that. So they said eventually they agreed to send a portion of Ventura's testimony that would include the text before and after the hotel assault. An Instagram post Ventura made after CNN released the video of the hotel assault will also be given to the jury. Sumerini ordered that it be ready for the jury by 1 p.m. Eastern. Combs sat with his defense team this morning wearing light pants and a light sweater, appearing a little bit on edge as the day began. Can you blame him? His life is in the balance here, especially when we are talking about the conversations around count one in the drug distribution. If they're discussing one of the predicate acts, it's like, oh, what does this mean? So he waved to his family and blew kisses to his mother, Janice, as she sat in the second row. Combs leaned over to speak to her later in the morning after both parties had argued over how to answer a question from the jury. Just relax, it's going to be all right, Ma, Combs told her. He added, I like your shirt, your outfit. She's been dressing up. She's definitely been dressing up. You would never know if you looked at Janice Combs that she's an 80-something-year-old woman, which I can appreciate dressing up. But at the same time, some people speculate that did she create the man, that the depraved man that we've learned about in this court case? She's not on the stand. I will always remind you guys of that. I always say the bigger crime here is, are those wigs. We had to have a light moment, couldn't we? Couldn't we? Guys, there will be more updates. This is just the update based off of day two, early afternoon of the jury deliberations. There, at this particular time, has not been a verdict. They were asking for more testimony from Cassie Ventura, and it looks like they came, both the defense and the prosecution came to an agreement to how much they want to share. Not the entire testimony, which is 800 pages. Again, if you missed our conversation with Kirsten Brown earlier this morning, it premiered. Be sure to check it out. It will give you a lot of clarity on the closing arguments, what we've seen so far, and what we can expect later. And this is why it's important to be listening to the podcast version of our Diddy trial updates, because literally this afternoon we had breaking news that the jury in the Diddy trial reached a verdict in 4 of the 5 charges. They are basically deadlocked. I don't know if that's the proper term, but they cannot get to a consensus on the 5th charge, which we're not surprised, because the 5th charge that they can't get to a consensus is the RICO, which a lot of people have been confused about. So let me give you an update in regards to what has been playing out this evening. I will tell you this, that the jury has been dismissed for the day, and the judge has new instructions for them, and not new instructions, but is reminding them of his instructions. But let me just give you an update when we had this breaking news. Earlier today, we premiered a video with my collaboration with Kirsten. Last night, we were up late having a conversation about the closing arguments, having a conversation about the question about drug distribution, and if that meant they had already come to a consensus on the RICO charge. Looks like they did not. So our speculation, which we told you, it was speculation. We didn't know, but that was an interesting question to ask. If we're talking about the predicates, why are you asking a question about the predicates when you've come to a conclusion that it's not guilty? Obviously, they did not come to a conclusion. But let me get to you updated in regards to what the breaking news was this evening. So the jury, according to NBC News, has told the judge it has reached a verdict on 4 of the 5 counts, but is unable to reach a consensus on the racketeering charge. The note said that there are jurors, that's plural, jurors that there are jurors with, quote, unpersuadable views. So there are more than one juror in here that are probably not convinced whether or not this is RICO. Not shocked. There are prosecutors. There are other attorneys that are not 100% convinced that this is RICO. And that's because this is the first time that I can tell that RICO is being charged for something of this nature. It's not the normal use for RICO. However, if you heard the conversation that I had with Kirsten, she helps paint the picture in regards to how this could be considered RICO. I will cite my conversation, or you can just take a listen to the last episode of this podcast, and you can see how she comes to that determination and how there are at least 2 predicates that have been proven by the prosecution. So NBC continues, they said attorneys for the prosecution and the defense have told the judge that they would like the jury to continue deliberating on count 1, which is the RICO charge. Agnifilo told the judge that the jury has been deliberating only a short time and should continue. Makes sense. Again, the defense, Kirsten talked about this, if they come back with their verdict too soon or very early, that doesn't look good for the defense. Agnifilo told the judge that they would like the jury to continue deliberating and that they've only been deliberating for a short time. Comey, who is the United States assistant United States attorney, also told the court that the prosecution will put together an Allen charge, instructions that urge a jury to keep working in order to avoid a hung jury. Subramanian, the judge over this case, asked for both sides to send proposed instructions and send it to his chambers so that he can take it from there. The government's prosecutors and defense team both say that they want jurors to keep deliberating on the remaining charge. The judge would read jurors an Allen charge, which is also informally called a dynamite charge, telling the jury to keep talking to find a way to agree to a verdict. So they're trying their best to avoid a hung jury. The judge informed the jury yesterday that in order to prove Combs's violated the RICO Act, there are four elements to consider. Subramanian instructed the jury that it must find that they're in agreement, whether spoken or unspoken, by at least two people to participate in a criminal enterprise. They must conclude that Combs has also been a willful member of the enterprise and knowingly committed two predicate crimes as a part of the criminal conspiracy. Reminder what those include. I'll remind you because I have the jury sheet in front of me. In regards to count one, how do you find the defendant is either not guilty or guilty? It then tells you if and only if you find the defendant guilty of count one, which type of racketeering acts do you unanimously? That's the problem. And I remember Kirsten talked about this in our recent collaboration. This is why the prosecution was trying to get unanimity within coming to this conclusion. But according to this verdict sheet, they have to unanimously find were involved in the offense. So there's acts of involving kidnapping. Then you have to check either not proved or proved. Acts involving arson, not proved or proved. Acts involving bribery, not proved or proved. Acts involving witness tampering, not proved or proved. Acts involving forced labor, not proved or proved. Acts involving sex trafficking, not proved or proved. Acts involving transportation for purposes of prostitution, not proved or proved. Acts involving drug distribution, which was the question that they sent to the judge yesterday in the late hour of the day. They wanted clarification on what that would be considered. Actually, I'll read the exact question to you from what we heard. If an individual asks for a controlled substance and the person hands it over, is that considered distribution? So I believe the judge gave them instructions in regards to that earlier today. So NBC continues in regards to what played out this evening in the court. The jury was brought back in. Subramanian, the judge over this case, is bringing the jury back into court after taking input from both the prosecution and the defense on what to tell jurors in response to their announcement that they are deadlocked on a single count. I do find it interesting that they immediately have already figured out four out of the five already, but I'm not surprised that count one is where they're deadlocked. It would have been interesting if they were deadlocked on one of the counts that we didn't think that they would be deadlocked on, but okay. The prosecution's suggestion is something less than a formal Allen charge, instead a response urging the jury to continue deliberations. The judge seemed to favor that proposal. There's also discussion on logistics for what happens if the jurors don't have a decision by Wednesday, as the court is closed Thursday and Friday up for the 4th of July, which I didn't even know about. Because normally, things like that, because the holiday falls on a Friday, I thought that they wouldn't. But again, federal courts, they have their own rules. So we learned that earlier today when we were in the live chat that the federal court is closed on Thursday and Friday, which is not good for the defense. That puts pressure on the jury to come to a verdict. It's never good for a holiday to be looming, and they've already been deliberating for the last couple of days, but they've been listening to this case for like almost 8 weeks. There's also discussion on logistics for what happens if the jurors don't have a decision by Wednesday as the court is closed Thursday and Friday for the 4th of July. But then they write this, Subramanian asked the jury to continue on with discussions to come to a consensus on the outstanding charge. He urged the jurors to remember his instructions and added that they should not hesitate to change an opinion when convinced. Subramanian advised them that they must weigh their opinion dispassionately. They were told to return to the jury room, and if they were done for the day, they would be brought back in for dismissal. So, the jury were dismissed for today. NBC writes, this is minutes after being told to return to the jury room, the group sent a note to the judge alerting them that it was done for the day. They probably like, you know, we're deadlocked today. Let's sleep on this and then come back refreshed tomorrow. I really do believe we will have a decision tomorrow in regards to, even if they decide they're still deadlocked, I think tomorrow we will have an answer. The jurors returned to the courtroom briefly to be formally dismissed for the day. Subramanian reminded them to keep an open mind as they continue deliberations tomorrow and thank them for all their hard work. I have to give it to them. It does feel like this jury is taking their job very seriously for the most part. We haven't really had that much drama with this jury, but I do remind you guys to take a listen to the collab that Kirsten and I did late last night. She was late in the office. I was, you know, she's in California. I'm here in New York. So it was very late for me. I wasn't done uploading everything until like 1 a.m. And then I really couldn't go back to sleep very, you know, right after that because you're talking about all this stuff. And then here we are. So I'm going to definitely try and catch up on some sleep.
Thanks for tuning in to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. As always, you can hear Kempire on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. More information can be found on KempireRadio.com.
Save big at Menards and prepare for the summer heat with a new air conditioner from Denali Air. Quickly and efficiently cool your spaces with auto and eco modes to maximize performance and save on energy costs. Cool your space from anywhere in the room with three cooling speeds and a remote control. Save big money on Denali air conditioners. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again.